You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
It's Sam Cedar, launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain.
This episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook of your choice. Go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. That's audiblepodcast.com/majority report for a free audiobook.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, March 15th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, I am back at fully 72% of full strength, and joining me in studio today will be the great Cliff Schechter to talk about the week in news, the week that I missed. Also on the program today to discuss or to give us a movie selection, as if I will ever have the opportunity to watch another movie over the course of the next probably half a decade, Isabel Gillies with movie picks. Also on the program today, the budget wars heat up. Liberals pushing back against President Obama and, frankly, the leadership of the Democrats in the House and the Senate. Say, don't you dare cut Social Security. Rob Portman, the first elected Republican senator to come out in support of marriage equality. And here's a shocker, folks. Why is he doing it? Well, of course, because one of his children are gay.
Surprise, surprise.
Yes, and as we speak, thousands, if not, well, probably just thousands of crazies are sitting in a conference room somewhere listening to other crazies speak. Yes, it's the annual CPAC convention, folks. we will get to all that and more as the program continues. But also, as we are speaking, the Senate Banking Committee is holding hearings on the fail whale, the J.P. Morgan massive losses of, well, I don't know what they're up to now, but before I took my break, it was at least pegged at $6 billion. But I'm sure it's more at this point of trades that J.P. Morgan participated in, and it is really impressive on how J.P. Morgan is playing this. Ina Drew, the former J.P. Morgan chief investment officer, has been testifying in front of the committee. In her prepared remarks, she said, basically, none of it was my fault. It was the fault of two guys who are just coincidentally outside the jurisdiction of the Senate Banking Committee, as they are Europeans. Or, well, and I guess the British office they were working out of, the men themselves may be Europeans. And, of course, it was their fault, not hers. They declined an invitation to testify. In fact, as far as I can tell from what I've been reading on Twitter, no one who's testifying is aware of anything. We have people providing evidence who might as well have just walked off, walked in off the street. I wasn't aware of whether what we were telling regulators, what we weren't telling regulators. This coming off of the heels of a report by the heels of a 300-page report released yesterday, as this Senate subcommittee is planning to, or has planned to, question these bank officials who apparently know nothing about any of it, saying that J.P. Morgan ignored their own internal controls. It manipulated documents that they were supposedly going to give to regulators, because some of the information was withheld from regulators. Remember, this is the J.P. Morgan, the responsible bank, headed by the responsible, non-hubristic, non-out-of-control Jamie Dimon. And I guess in the words of Jamie Dimon, that's why he's so rich and the rest of you suckers aren't. I don't know if he chuckled like that when he did that. So we will talk more about this. Probably we'll have someone on Monday to discuss this these J.P. Morgan shenanigans at length. And let me take a moment before, as we wait on Cliff Schechter's arrival into the studio. He must, of course, before you enter into the Majority Report studio, you must go through a thorough.
Cliff is getting frisked right now.
He's getting frisked. Then, of course, he will go into the anti-radiation booth. He will then be showered down, cleansed. far more important of a procedure when you leave the studio. Frankly, but he will make his way in here.
He's getting a knish right now.
Yeah.
That's what you get at the end of the process.
Right. So that your blood level, your blood sugar levels will increase. So just a couple words. First off, I want to congratulate Matt and Michael for holding down the fort. The baby came far quicker, or far sooner than I had anticipated. And so from myself and from what I have been reading in terms of reactions, I listened to one or two of the shows, not totally, then just enough to be offended by some of the things that were said. This I give you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, you don't need to raise your... Yeah, okay. You don't need to get carried away.
I went with the wrong one here.
Right.
Because my mic is now in a different...
Matt got very...
I was like, okay, here we go.
There was a lot of use of the sound machine, from what I can understand, in my absence. And also, I want to thank Tina Dupuy, who, by all accounts, did a wonderful job sitting in for me. My son was born 7 days and 7 hours ago. 5:36 a.m. in the morning, March 7th, Thursday morning. His name, as far as I know, still continues to be Saul Arthur Cedar.
Sass.
We discussed this on the show, yes.
Sassy.
Sass.
He is doing very well. He is very healthy. And the pediatrician was very impressed. The guy eats constantly. And
the baby or the pediatrician?
Both. Pediatrician could use to lose a few pounds. No, my child is a champion eater, according to the pediatrician. She said the pediatrician said she rarely sees children whose birth weight has been maintained days later. Apparently, what happens is the kids lose weight after they've been born, because all the mucus, I guess, gets drained out of them. I don't know exactly what happens. And then as a breastfed child, which mine is at to this point, he has maintained his weight. The pediatrician was a little bit shocked. The pediatrician wouldn't have been shocked if he could see what my child does. He basically just eats and then falls asleep. Eats and falls asleep. I will say this, and this should be good news. I say this. We'll get into the specifics of my experience later in the program, in the better half of the program. But I will say this, that, and this is good news for the entire Majority Report community, the baby appears at this time. I don't want to go too far out on a limb, and I think, you know, one always hesitates to prognosticate on such things, appears to be far calmer and more subdued than Mila, which means that there is a chance I may get more sleep than I did with Mila, which means that the show should not suffer as much as I anticipated it would suffer based upon my prior experience. Now, with that said, I'm exhausted. The baby still obviously wakes up every 2 hours to feed. And there's no room in my apartment for me to go anywhere to get some sleep because my mother-in-law is on the couch. Bless her for being here. And I think probably what we'll do next week as we return back to some normal programming, maybe we'll switch that up and I will be out on the couch to get some sleep. Knock on wood, the baby hopefully will sleep more, which means that I will sleep more, which means that all of you will get a better product. All right, we're going to take a quick break, Cliff Schechter will be joining us. I will also say, just as a housekeeping measure, I'll be here live all next week, and then the following week, we're going to take our regularly scheduled vacation, and we will have mostly new content and some pre-tapes for you. And let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter live in studio. And, of course, you can head over to majority.fm and see us broadcast on near HD quality, which may or may not be something you'd be interested in. All right, we'll be right back after this break.
I turn my camera on, I cut my fingers on the way, on the way. The way you're slipping away, I turn my feelings on. You made me untouchable for life. Yeah, yeah. And you wasn't alone. It hit me like a tone.
This episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, you can get a free audiobook download right now. Go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. That's audiblepodcast.com/majority report. Why not pick up, in celebration of CPAC, FUBAR, America's Right-Wing Nightmare? That's right. The book that I wrote with Steve and Cheryl, we wrote it about 6 years ago now, but it is still just as relevant when you're talking about crazy right-wingers. You can pick it up. It's got a 3.7 out of 4 stars on Audible right now. audiblepodcast.com/majority report. Get it for free.
I saw them stars go off tonight. Ooh, yeah. And they're looking right. Oh, well,
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, what fortuitous timing in seeing as I'm, somewhere around 60 to 70% right now, I would say, of my normal skills, which, of course, still keeps me in the top 98% of all podcasts, political podcasts out there. There's a reason why we got Best Political Podcast Award 2 years running.
Definitely,
ladies and gentlemen. Wait, before we hear the dulcet tones of Cliff Schechter, we need to hear Cliff Schechter's theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter,
that's right, ladies and gentlemen. Cliff Schechter is here with us now. We are still almost. We're still playing with the audio of.
Look at Sam.
There we go. No, that's not going to work.
By the way,
what
Sam just did, that's actually one of the things they do at
Steve Pence. Yes, there you go. Yeah, there you go.
How
all right, ladies and
rustle
gentlemen.
Up some cattle.
Let's yes,
that
there we go.
Determines the cost of coming in. Also, how much you can discriminate against gay people.
Now, are we hearing Cliff?
Cliff, unfortunately, was not up. Just
Cliff was not up. All right, Cliff, please speak.
Am I on?
Yes.
To say how you were rustling up some cattle there, it's one of those things they actually test at CPAC.
There you go.
It's that, riding dinosaurs and discriminating against gay people.
I don't know if we can hear you now. Go ahead.
Come on, man. Do you think it would be a good time for Sam to do a mid-career rebrand now and come out as a conservative?
I
think he would do well?
I think so.
Yeah.
Didn't Ed Schultz do that? Oh, wait, I wasn't supposed to say that, was I?
Oh,
it's been a rough week.
We will get to that also.
Excise that one.
Do we have a headphone for an extra headphone around for Cliff just so that he can – you don't have like a phone thing or something like that? Don't you use like a phone headset?
No. One of these people that just goes old.
All right.
Phone.
Well,
I have some.
Okay. Okay.
I have some old school headphones in there.
No, don't worry about it.
Okay.
Don't worry about it. Okay. So, Cliff, welcome. We will get to that news. Now, I want to say one of the first things I heard when the Ed Schultz news broke was, of course, that it was going to implicate this show in some manner. I figured Matt and Michael would end up getting the 8 p.m. time slot. I am.
You'd have to find new talent.
Was it not for Chris Hayes getting that time slot, I would be disappointed. But that you guys didn't get it because I would be able to upgrade my producer crew. But
snap!
No, I heard. There was comments. It was flying around. I heard some stuff.
I was waiting in line. I was hoping I'd get to be a producer.
Yeah,
next.
There you go.
What does it take?
Well,
what must I sacrifice?
We'll have to wait and see. But all right, let's get to the good stuff, and then we'll talk we'll talk about this Chris Hayes thing. I think it's great news. I'm so excited to watch news regularly on a regular basis at 8 p.m. But which not to say that Ed didn't do a great job for I really do think that he was. Instrumental in helping the publicize what was going on in Wisconsin.
Yeah,
and a lot of the attacks on unions over the years. But I find
really
Chris's
moving
stuff
MSNBC
more interesting
in that direction. Right? I mean, wasn't he the first one? So you had Oberman, but then Oberman left. I don't remember. Did Oberman and Ed Schultz, were they there at the same time?
I think Ed was 6 p.m.
So Ed was the third progressive show after I thought maybe he came right after Rachel's show, but maybe I don't remember correctly. I know Cenk was on for a while.
Right.
And I don't know. So what I just said, you probably should just disregard the whole thing.
No, but I mean, you know, kudos to him. And he, you know, his radio program is very important to the progressive radio sphere because it gets a lot of clearance. And yeah. So it provides an anchor. But let's talk about a couple of issues. First off, Cliff, you're in New York. You were born in New York. But as this audience is well aware, you were forced into exile in Ohio because of marriage.
My wife would appreciate your point.
Yes,
it that way.
Well, no, that's if there's ever a question as to why somebody does something that you can't fully explain at first, then you look at the fact that they're probably married, and so.
However, when I do cross Cincinnati, don't sit in 40 minutes of traffic like I just said right. From east to west.
There you go.
There are benefits.
Definitely,
there are drawbacks. No pizza at 2 a.m.
Wendy's.
However, when I asked Wendy's. The PCU what time I would get here for the show, I was thinking to myself, I haven't lived in New York for now about a dozen years because I was in Washington, D.C. in between. And I was thinking, it's only about 10, 12 blocks away. So it should be about 20 minutes. I'll get there.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You need a scooter is what you need. Yeah. All right. But let's talk about this Portman thing because it is on one hand.
And he's from Cincinnati, which is, I think, where you're going.
Right. Indeed. Yeah. And on one hand, it is. It's pretty big news insofar as he's the only Republican senator to come out in favor of marriage equality. There was a big show, I think it was about 2 weeks ago now, of big Republican luminaries coming out in support of marriage equality, but they were all
former. Except for
former
two congressionals.
Two congressional backbenchers in two of the few purple congressional right. districts in this country. And so it was essentially a story about how the Republican Party, if you're an elected Republican official, you cannot come out in favor of marriage equality. Portman breaks the mold, but in a way, he really doesn't, does he?
No, and it's interesting on a couple of counts. The first one that you bring up is very interesting in that you've got these guys like Portman, of course, who can only be liberal when they've personally experienced something. That's how they break the mold. In other words, I wrote a column on this about a month ago. And, you know, because at the time, Mark Kirk, who people may know, the senator from Illinois, he is one of the more moderate Republican senators yet. He still votes with them on most issues. He sticks with his party. And he was one of the ones supporting cutting Medicaid and things of that sort. He had his stroke. He went and he saw that he needed all of this rehab to get back to where he was and said, if I had only been limited to the rehab I would have gotten under Medicaid, I wouldn't have come nearly as far as I am right now. So he had this newfound devotion to Medicaid. Chris Christie, who loves berating teachers, eating jelly donuts, and going after unions, and who's now become a hero that many in the left love, people forget he still will cut almost any program. But when a hurricane hits his area, then the government needs to step in, much like those legislators from the Louisiana area who don't want to give hurricane money to New York, but do want to give money when it hits them. And it just seems, and I could go on through the list, Chuck Hagel being someone who's great on war and peace issues because he went to Vietnam. You know, Pete Domenici, who likes getting involved in the sheets with friends' daughters and is anti-choice and is anti-gay, but he used to fight like hell for parity for mental health issues because his daughter suffered from mental health issues. And we can go on. It's like to be conservative, it seems you have to be personally affected. In fact, that was even in Rob Portman's statement. I love my son, and I believe he should have equality. Well, what about everybody else's sons? Do we need your son to be poor so you'll raise the minimum wage? Do we need your son to be forced into a pregnancy so that you will be pro-choice? Do we need your son to be shot at so that you'll be for the assault weapons ban? And I mean, this is the thing that drives me nuts about conservatives. We all gain perspective through life. I've gained perspective through having kids. Sadly, one of the reasons I was late here today, my father's in the hospital right now. I've gained some perspective into Medicare and some of the other things, even though I was always very much for them, but I've gained more perspective. But the difference between us and them, frankly, is that we can empathize and try to understand situations beyond our own. And it just conservatives just don't seem to be able to do that.
You're absolutely. I mean, I wanted to read this one part of Portman's announcement. When he talks about first, he mentions 2 years ago, my son Will, then a college freshman, told my wife Jane and me that he is gay. He said he'd known for some time and that his sexual orientation wasn't something he chose. It was simply part of who he is. And Portman talks about, well, I'm proud of my son for his honesty, et cetera, et cetera. At the time, my position on marriage for same-sex couples was rooted in my faith tradition that marriage is a sacred bond between a man and a woman. And then here's the turn. It really is poetic in a sense. Knowing that my son is gay prompted me to consider the issue from another perspective. In other words, I've never considered the issue from another perspective. And I'm locked into that framework.
Right.
That's what you're talking about here. That of a dad who wants his three kids to lead happy, meaningful lives with the people they love, a blessing Jane and I have shared for 26 years. And Matt Iglesias linked on Twitter to a piece that Mark Schmidt wrote, who I think is now at the American Prospect. I'm not sure where he is, and I'm not sure where he was at the time. But this is from 2005.
Right.
And he was talking at the time about Senator Gordon Smith, who from Oregon, if I remember correctly.
That is correct.
And he talks about how Gordon Smith came out for against cuts to Medicaid. And he says he doesn't – and this is under the Bush administration. And first he talks about how, you know, I don't think this is terribly courageous of this guy to come out for a position that is incredibly popular with his constituents in a blue state.
Right.
You know, and he's not particularly courageous for doing something that's completely sound in
right.
terms of policy. And he says, he writes, I'm tired of giving quasi-conservatives credit for what I call Miss America compassion. Smith's son's suicide led him to support more funding for suicide prevention and for mental health care generally. Great, Schmidt writes. My life has been affected by suicide also, so I'm for that. Similarly, Senator Pete Domenici's daughter of mental illness made him an advocate for mandating equitable treatment of mental and physical well-being and health insurance, a cause which he was joined by Paul Wellstone. Again, I'm all for it. But what has always bothered me about such examples is that their compassion seems so narrowly and literally focused on the specific misfortune that their family encountered.
Yeah.
Having a child who suffers from mental illness would indeed make one particularly passionate about funding for mental health, sure. But shouldn't it also lead, and this is the key graph, lead to a deeper understanding that there are a lot of families in all kinds of situations beyond their control who need help from government. This is the step
yes.
that conservatives cannot take even once they get a perfect example of how blind they've been. So in other words, Rob Portman could learn two things from having a son come out to him. One is he could learn, I need to see this particular issue from a different perspective, i.e. from the perspective of a father of a gay child who I know as a father deserves all the rights that and the opportunities that I perceived he deserved before I knew he was gay.
Right.
That he should be able to have a loving relationship and a committed relationship, a long-term relationship with all the rights that are afforded people who are married. But what it also should teach him, which he cannot seem to learn even in this instance, never mind before this instance, is that, hey, this should open my eyes to the fact that I am not empathetic or I've not been seeing the other perspective on a whole raft of issues
right.
that are far greater than mine. I'm not even learning from this dynamic, never mind what I'm learning from in this particular instance. And this has been, as you say, this has been something that has plagued conservatives from the get-go.
Right.
Here is, let's play a clip of Rand Paul in front of CPAC. He's now hero. And I want to talk a little bit about, I did hear your conversation with Michael about Rand Paul's filibuster, which, as my wife was going into labor, I was like, sweetie, you got to hold off on this at least till midnight. I want to see what happens with this.
Did she do that for you?
She did. She did. Okay.
Let's give her some credit.
She gets a lot of credit for that. But let's hear Rand Paul. This is one the only clip we have from CPAC. Of course, it's folks will be hearing clips about CPAC ad nauseum, not just because of its of the quantity, but also the quality of the clips. But let's just play this Rand Paul one because it's another perfect example.
This month, I will propose a 5-year balanced budget. My budget eliminates the Department of Education.
Right. I mean, they're so excited at the notion of, well, good, we get rid of this Department of Education. We're all private school.
And again, Rand Paul is somebody who was all for cutting the budget. And remember, it was unconstitutional for the government to make sure that African Americans can eat the same lunch counter as you and I. He supports a personhood amendment, would deprive women of the most basic rights. But when they asked him why he accepted Medicare for his practice, he's a doctor of sorts, he said because doctors have the right to make a good living too. I mean, have you ever heard anything so unbelievably hypocritical to say that in sort of a blithely, like, oh, you know, we deserve to make a good living too. What about people that need to make a minimum wage to eat? What about people on Social Security that need to pay for their medicine and that's the only way they can do it? And it's like, I you know what? I sent a tweet out earlier. I hope Rob Portman's son comes out of the closet in favor of Social Security, an assault weapons ban, raising the minimum wage. I hope maybe we find out he's pregnant. He has tough decisions to make. I mean, because maybe that's the only way we can get Rob Portman and all of his friends to actually look at these other issues. Rob Portman, I know, again, I'm from Cincinnati, comes from a wealthy family that owns one of the most oldest and sort of most renowned hotel restaurants called the Golden Lamb in Lebanon, Ohio. Laugh at that as you will. In Lebanon, Ohio, which is a sort of far out kind of exurb of Cincinnati. He went to Dartmouth. He never had any trouble financially in life. Maybe if one of his kids were unemployed and poor, he'd feel differently about that. And, you know, and his social conservatism, which I don't think he believes in most of it, comes from a time, you know, Cincinnati 30 years ago was the place that spawned the likes of Ken Blackwell. People like myself have been moving there for a variety of reasons, and it's changed. It supported Obama the last two elections. So maybe it's now a little safer for Rob Portman to come out for some of these things. But in the end result is I don't care what he really thinks. I care what he does. Right. And all of these guys either believe this garbage or behind the scenes, I think a whole lot of them, from your Lisa Murkowski's to your Rob Portman's to your Dan Coates's and others, feel the same way their colleagues who've left the Senate, who many of whom came out and endorsed Obama, Durenberger, the former senator from Minnesota, and I'm trying to think, a former governor, what was his name, Larry, whatever, from South Dakota, who, you know, all these guys, because they're no longer in elected office.
Right.
You know, like Huntsman now. So they can come out and before all this stuff, I don't believe that it differs so much that, oh, I was in Congress 5 years ago, but I've completely changed since I've left. These guys are just all scared and they won't do the right thing. I mean, I shouldn't say all. I'd say there's a chunk of them that are scared, and then there's all the Tea Party people, you know, who are absolutely insane and sit in corners and stare at the wall, you know, and try to think of ways to make other people's lives more difficult.
There are two implications here. One is that it's an insight into the real sort of the way in which conservatives think in terms of their capacity for empathy, because your tweet says it all. I mean, you know, if Portman had relatives who were, you know, the takers, not the makers, or as they would perceive it, perhaps his perspective would be different. And then, of course, it also gets back to that thing that we've been saying for some time now, is that the Republican Party basically made a Faustian deal to enhance their electoral opportunities, which is create an electoral base out of a combination of misogyny and homophobia and racism and nationalism.
The
and
brown shirt wing.
Yes.
Of the party. And I'm sorry to say it that way, but that's where they are the storm. They're the foot soldiers who go and raise hell.
Yes. And do it on the backs of these social issues, and society is leaving them behind, but they are still essentially beholden to that. And we see it time and time again. And so, I mean, it's simply, it's fascinating. And again, you know,
What courage do we really need? I mean, are we really going to say that that Portman, it took courage for him to come out and say, I don't want to screw over my own son? Right. I mean, honestly. I mean, honestly.
Dick Cheney's one of the most antisocial human beings. If you saw that piece in the New York Times today, because this new documentary is coming out on him, he's still like, we did the right thing in Iraq. I'll do it again. Thousands of people died because of this guy's lies and this guy's stupidity and his ineptitude. And I can go on and on. He's literally a terrible human being. But he's for gay marriage because that's what it, that helps his own personal family. That helps his daughter. And again, I'm not saying I'm not glad to have Rob Portman with us on this.
Right.
I am.
No, of course.
The more the merrier. And I'm glad to have Mark Kirk now supporting Medicaid. And I'm glad to have Chris Christie thinking the government has a role in providing hurricane relief. But at the same time, you know, we still need to call out these people and say, when can you see beyond your own circumstances?
Right.
When can you, we talk about evolution, you know, Rob Portman's, you know, evolved in this issue. It really, I think this really is evolutionary biology. At some point, these guys haven't quite made it as far up the evolutionary ladder as some of
us. That's right.
Because we're all born originally to fear everything that's different. That's how the species survived. As we get to be more evolved, we learn, hey, that person has darker skin than me. That person is a woman. I'm a man. That person has a different sexual preference. Maybe they're still the same as me in most ways. Maybe, you know, in the ways that count, we're still the same people. But on the right, they just can't seem to take that step up, you know, further step up the evolutionary ladder. It seems that that part of the ladder breaks and they fall down to the bottom whenever they try to do that.
Well, I mean, I think the conservative id is fundamentally reliant upon this notion of my circumstances are universal.
Right.
And I cannot imagine, it is impossible for me to perceive that other people could be just as good a people in different, but in different circumstances than me.
Only our way, God, country, and you can only do it the way we've done it.
And they, even in those instances where they have a perfect example, not just of their own, that in their narrow silo, that the circumstances are different. But they can't even learn from that example that wow, I was really myopic on this one issue. Perhaps I'm myopic on these other issues. And that, I think, you know, takes us, in some respects, this is the exact same dynamic that we are seeing in the argument for Social Security. Because it's the exact same argument that I had even with Jonathan Alter.
That's right. The people that don't need Social Security, it's amazing how, because to them it's not an issue.
So it's not an issue. And, you know, and this is, you know, we have there, this is a, you know, I think it's not a coincidence, and I'm not saying this in any way to disparage Jonathan Alter, but I do not think it's a coincidence that he is generating more of these cut Social Security pieces as the administration is getting more muscular, I guess, in their presentation of this idea. Gene Sperling.
He does need to, I got to say, Jonathan Alter does need to shave that little piece of hair on the front there.
Well,
it drives
me
freaking crazy.
We all have, we all have our.
I'm such a jerk. I know. I can't help it.
But
can
this,
I say one more thing, though? I
please.
Don't want to interrupt, but I think this is an important point because I know obviously a lot of people who are watching, listening, are progressive activists and are really involved. And this, the Portman situation, because that is the situation, frankly, with many conservatives, whether we like it or not. It's a reminder of how important it is for all of us to tell our stories. It's a reminder of how important it was for the gay rights movement to start getting people to come out of the closet. For women, when Darcy Berner stood up at Netroots Nation last year and said that women who had abortions, which is 30% to 40% of women out there, which most people would never even fathom that because they kept it quiet in the right, need to step up and talk about how victims of gun violence need to come out and talk about it. And we all need people to tell their stories because it seems like those personal stories are the only thing that's possible to get conservatives to change their opinions. And the Rob Portman story situation is one great example of somebody's opinion that's changed. I wish more universal circumstances could change his opinion, but it seems it has to be close and personal to them.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know how that works with – I mean, it's a challenge. I mean, because, you know, when you have the policy apparatus – owned. I mean, I'm talking now, you know, pivoting to Social Security, but because I think, fortunately, the the policy apparatus is not dominated by these social conservatives to the extent that it used to be.
That's right.
And we still obviously have five members of the Supreme Court who are going to end up, I think, having more to say about this than they certainly should. But the case...
Except for Clarence Thomas. He doesn't talk.
Right. Well, he'll say it behind closed doors, you know, where most of this stuff is...
He'll have his wife say it at Tea Party rallies and then funnel money her way, but then not report it on his income statements.
But the reason why people are inoculated from this in Social Security and Medicare is that, you know, Jonathan Alter can say, like, my mom's on Medicare, or I don't know if he says this, but this is a line that I hear quite a bit from people who are willing to – and the fact is, well, okay, you're fortunate enough that you're going to be able to supplement what she's going to lose, right, in terms of Medicare coverage or whether it's Social Security payments. And this week, Gene Sperling, who had said in his exchange with Bob Woodward that entitlement reform was baked into the DNA of the sequester, that the sequester was, in fact, a tactic so that we could get to entitlement reform and increase revenues. But we know that entitlement reform has been part of the agenda of the Obama administration. I don't know that that's controversial anymore. I've been told in the past that it is a controversial statement, but I think that those people must have given up on that notion now. That entitlement reform has been part of the Obama administration agenda since day one of their administration.
I think it has been. I think it's just – not even to do it in a major way. It's more about the checking it off the list and saying, as a legacy thing, we reformed entitlements.
Definitely.
So then they look at it and they say, you know, because from their perspective, all the people they know are people that are giving up, you know, private sector wealth by going to the public sector and making only $125,000 a year or something like that. You know, the people in government, then they know the wealthy people in the private sector. So who could change CPI really hurt? I mean, it's really just a minuscule amount of money, right? That's their perspective. So we're not going to actually really cut. I mean, you hear this. We're not going to alter Social Security in any real way. We're just going to
Structurally change it.
Right.
We're just going to cut the benefits.
CPI. And then they can feel like we checked that off the list. We reformed Social Security. We can claim that forever. And it didn't really hurt anybody, because who could possibly be hurt by that?
Right. And the fascinating thing, I mean, just to broaden this out for a second, because, you know, we have compared this to President Clinton's welfare reform, which all policy people will now tell you was disastrous. I mean, the reason why we see such an expansion of SNAP, of food stamps, of other programs is to make up for what happened with welfare reform. And it does it in a very poor fashion, no pun intended. Because once you've started to lose jobs, essentially, in this country, then it made it very clear just how damaging welfare reform was. Yet,
and it's all
you can never hear anyone in the mainstream media. I would challenge anybody to find a single comment by a commentator on any show anywhere or news report that mentions welfare reform as part of Clinton's legacy in a negative light. In fact, it's always done in a positive light, as if legacies, when it comes to domestic policies now, and this wasn't always the case, but it really seems to be the only way to perceive a legacy in terms of domestic policies now, is when government is able to deny benefits to people.
Right.
I mean, it is only in that context where, as if the corporate, the establishment class perceives, like, look, people are always going to want stuff from government. It is a real feather in your legacy cap.
As Bill O'Reilly would say, stuff.
It's stuff
we
from
just
government.
Want stuff.
Stuff from government. It's a real legacy.
Like food.
If you can teach the people to make do with less. And not less in the sense of, like, hey, we got to turn back this consumer culture that we have. We've got to have less energy. It is, if you can make them just, I mean, you could say suffer, or you could just simply say, just expect less from government. And without contemplating the implications of it, as if this is, because it wasn't always the case, FDR's legacy was built upon, hey, government can actually help people and do it effectively and keep people out of poverty. And so
as conservatives would say, quoting Jesus, you can either give a man a fish Or you can teach him to fish, but then hold the fish just far enough out of reach so that they starve while trying to get
right. Or you can teach him to fish, but make sure that all the fish in the pond is basically behind a net.
But make sure all the fish are in Jonathan Alter's bank account.
Yeah, only our buddies get to be in the stocked area of the pond.
Right.
So we'll teach you to fish.
Right. You just
doesn't
have
mean
to,
that
you
there's
going to
be any fish out there.
You just
in the
have
pond.
To do it in the East River.
Right. Exactly.
Good luck.
Exactly. You get the East River. We get the beautiful, pristine, protected area where we have the trout fishing.
And I'll just say quickly, it's just a shame because there could be a legacy here. And I'm going to go all Rob Portman on you for a second. Because, yes, you know, I did bring it up. My dad is in the hospital. It's one of the reasons I'm here right now. And I will tell you, I didn't need this to happen for me to be in favor of improving Medicare.
Right.
But, I always have been because I have that weird empathy thing where I like to look at people's circumstances. But, you know, seeing this up close and seeing and realizing that, you know, when he gets out at some point, he may need to be need full care all the time and may only have 4 hours a day covered by Medicare. And the rest would be on my family to pay. And you know, it looks like we're lucky in that my mom, you know, was able to afford it. But how many people can't afford that?
Right.
How many people, when someone comes out and needs that kind of care beyond the 4 hours they get? So the truth is we should be adding to Medicare. We should be lowering the Medicare age. We should be adding to it. We should be improving it. We should be doing obviously the same thing. We say this over and over again with Social Security. Cap on the tax gone? Fixed. That's a real tough fix there, huh? Real tough. I mean, I don't understand why that can't be the legacy. That would be FDR's legacy.
I think it's simply because the way that the establishment perceives this is that he would have been caving in to the whims and wishes of 80% of the people in this country.
Yes.
I mean, literally, that's what it would amount to. And
who knew the 80% socialist contingent out there?
We had Gene Sperling apparently doing an AMA on exactly. FDR did not have courage in that respect. He just capitulated to the will of all those people in the Depression.
I found him to be rather
to
wimpy.
To eat. And,
he had this strange sort of wimpiness about him where he said, people need a program. I think I'll create
I'm
that program.
I'm afraid to not feed the people. Gene Sperling on Reddit doing one of those Ask Me Anythings. And he talks about the CPI not just in the context of trying to avert the sequester or to relitigate the sequester, but as in a long-term agenda that they have had. This change CPI now has been embraced at least by Nancy Pelosi, saying that, well, if we can figure out how to cut Social Security but protect the poor and sick. Now, understand that 65%...
The answer is clearly welfare reform.
Well, first off, if it's not a cut, right? If it's simply a more accurate way of measuring inflation, why would you need to protect those people? Right? I mean, what are you protecting them from? A more accurate way of – no, it's a benefit cut.
We want to protect the people from not hurting them.
Right. Yes. We want to make sure they're protected from not being hurt from something that we're doing that is not hurting them. And that will make it all well. But we have 65% now. 66% of Americans over the age of 65 depend on an average annual Social Security benefit of $15,168 for at least half of their income. So I don't know what percentage of people, basically they're talking about putting a means test exclusively on, you know, in that next quintile. That just means maybe they rely on it for 40% of their income in old age. They want to means test this for the top few percent of people. We know that creating an apparatus to do so will basically provide you no savings at the end of the day. There's a much easier way of doing this. You've already stated it. Remove the cap. Increase progressive taxation. And
50 other ways we've discussed before.
50
too.
Other ways. And in the context of all these budget fighting now, we see the Progressive Caucus has come out with their Making America Work budget, following up their people's budget from last year. It is the only sound budget that people are suggesting. It calls for increased taxes, but a lot more stimulating of the economy right now. It calls for greater government services. It's the only one that even the wonks are looking at and saying is adding up. And I will say, the difference between the response to this budget versus even the last one, the people's budget, is encouraging, because you actually now have wonks who, you know, guys like Ezra Klein, who are taking it seriously. Because, you know, why would you take Paul Ryan's budget seriously, which says basically get rid of Medicare? And
you know what? That actually to me is just as encouraging. It's how many fewer people took Paul Ryan's budget seriously this time. Thankfully, maybe, I don't know, Krugman deserves the credit for constantly banging and drumming, being like, this is not a serious guy. This is the equivalent of my giving my 3-year-old a couple of crayons and letting him go scribble some things on the wall.
Right.
There's nothing serious about this. That's coming from me, not Krugman. But Krugman was basically making that point, that you can write a bunch of numbers on paper and that doesn't make it reasonable. It doesn't make them add up.
Right.
And again, because it really seems like he's getting hammered this time over the Obamacare. Ooh, we'll get rid of Obamacare. Oh, you know, get over it, pal. You got waxed in the last election. Nobody likes you. You look like Eddie Munster. You're really annoying. Shut up.
Let me juxtapose this. I mean, you know, there was a lot of issues that I had with Dennis Kucinich, but his suggestion that we get rid of the Defense Department was considered, you know, was put on par with, why don't we just wave a magic wand? Well, the idea of getting rid of Obamacare at this point is also similarly, I think, fantastical. And would leave us, I would argue, far more exposed in many respects.
But again, at least in Paul Ryan's case, he never benefited from the government. So
right, yeah, exactly.
So I feel a lot better saying that, because basically from the age of about 12 till yesterday, he didn't benefit from the government in every way imaginable.
Right. Famously, it was Social Security that basically kept him from falling through the cracks.
Contracts, built his family's wealth. He went and worked for every government entity you could find. Maybe he even created a couple new government entities just so he could work for them. And here he is.
And so back in the context of the CPI. No, that's fine. The Pelosi yesterday, I guess it was, or 2 days ago, said if we can demonstrate that it doesn't hurt the poor and the very elderly about the CPI, then let's take a look at it. She's in the past come out with it saying that it wasn't cuts. I think the ball is moving in that way. I think even in the context of my debate with Jonathan Alter, he at one point said, well, I mean, put aside the CPI at one point and means test. But we have now
– and there's a lot of senators. I want to be clear, because I've seen some of these and I have – I should disclose I've consulted for Social Security Works in the past. I'm not right now, but I still feel strongly about the issue. And so I've seen some of these documents and saying there are a number of Senate Democrats standing up strongly. That may be the
guys
place.
Like White House, I think, is certainly one of them. And there, I think there's probably about a dozen that have signed.
The Senate may be the place we could stop that thing.
Yes.
So call your senator and make sure they know your feelings on
well,
this.
Well, the other important fact, though, is that we can also stop this in the House. When you now have 100 Democratic congresspeople, essentially the, the Progressive Caucus Plus, who are basically saying don't touch Social Security, this is important because – it will put the onus on the Republicans to pass any proposal to cut Social Security. And as much as they claim they want to do that, they don't want to be the ones to do that.
No.
Because that'll put them in a very, very tenuous position in 2014. And
this is the stuff we've talked about. What they want is they want Social Security and Medicare cut. President
by
Obama
the Democrats.
To do it, and then they get to attack the Democrats
in
2014.
And with a majority in the House that is made up in equal parts Democrats and Republicans, if not more Democrats. And so while –
equal part people in their own coalition suffering from paranoid delusions.
Yes. And so any type of increased revenues that are married with this position may be the poison pill. And that is the argument that people make.
Yep.
President Obama needs to do this to seem reasonable, but there's a poison pill. But
all.
I mean, honestly, like, you know, where is the benefit of this reasonableness? Even if you were to stipulate that he has won over the reasonable class in the establishment in Washington, to what benefit? To his agenda or to the country.
I think you're being pretty unfair, Sam. Some people got a really nice $85 dinner out of this.
Well, that's
and so there are some benefits to his being reasonable.
Indeed. I guess you got Republican senators who are now eating well.
I heard that Lindsey Graham had the best time he's ever had when not rug shopping with John McCain.
Yeah, there you go.
The Shoreham market. So that's important to note. He may be a little happier, and we may not have to hear long stories during sessions about how he would defend his house with his AR-15.
Now, speaking of
because I like hearing Lindsey overcompensate.
Now, the assault weapons ban has passed the Senate subcommittee. Is that correct?
That's correct. Even with the McCarthyite troll himself, Mr. Ted Cruz, who looks so much like Joe McCarthy, I honestly think there are reincarnation possibilities there. He sounds and looks so much like him. He got schooled by Dianne Feinstein, which you
let's play this clip.
It's beautiful.
Let's play this clip. Let's start with Ted Cruz. Let's hear this now. Matt's just used to.
It seems to me that all of us should begin as our foundational document with the Constitution.
All right, just speed it up.
And the Second Amendment in the Bill of Rights provides that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
The term, the right of the people. When the framers included it in the Bill of Rights, they used it as a term of
That's
art.
Awesome.
That same phrase, the right of the people, is found in the First Amendment, the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition their government for redress of grievances. It's also found in the Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures.
Always
and the question that I would pose to the senior senator from California is, would she deem it consistent with the Bill of Rights for Congress to engage in the same endeavor that we are contemplating doing with the Second Amendment in the context of the First or Fourth Amendment?
Let me just make a couple of points in response. One, I'm not a sixth grader. Senator, I've been on this committee for 20 years. I was a mayor for 9 years. I walked in, I saw people shot. I've looked at bodies that have been shot with these weapons. I've seen the bullets that implode. In Sandy Hook, youngsters were dismembered. I mean, it's fine you want to lecture me on the Constitution. I appreciate it. Just know I've been here for a long time. I've passed on a number of bills. I've studied the Constitution myself. I am reasonably well educated, and I thank you for the lecture. Incidentally, this does not prohibit, you use the word prohibit, it exempts 2,271 weapons. Isn't that enough for the people in the United States?
Mr. Chairman.
Do they need a bazooka? Do they need other high-powered weapons that military people use to kill in close combat? I don't think so.
Good for her.
Yeah.
And here's what people don't remember and don't know, which was in 1978.
Yes.
She was the one on the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco that discovered the bodies of Harvey Milk and Mayor Moscone.
And made the announcement, if I remember correctly. I mean,
she came out and made the announcement to the press. And again, she's experienced it personally. She's been a champion on this issue. I've disagreed with her, by the way, on a number of other issues. I'll say the other thing I found interesting about that is Ted Cruz saying, would we do this on the Fourth Amendment? You have, buddy.
Right.
Right,
right, indeed.
Warrantless wiretaps and all the other constitutional abrogations that you and your caucus support wholeheartedly. You would do it to the Fourth Amendment. But the Second Amendment, as you're talking about, has nothing to do with what you're saying, because even Scalia in his right-wing interpretation of the Second Amendment said that exotic weapons like military weapons could be limited.
Right.
But the Fourth Amendment, on the other hand, which you brought up so kindly, is something that you're all too happy to shred and destroy at a moment's notice. So I found that kind of ironic.
All right. We just got a minute here. You're going to stick around for the later part of the show.
Yes.
But what do you think? I mean, I obviously been out the past week. I was a little surprised to see that this is past the Senate committee. Is this going to get to the floor? Are we going to see a vote on this?
I think we will. You have to remember that it passed the committee, but it was Democrats. It was completely partisan. There may be ways they can bring more Republicans in. A few have offered, at least they are open-minded. Mark Kirk has.
But I think this is encouraging, at least that we're going to see it, them take a vote. Debate.
They're going to take a vote.
That's big.
And on the two other bills that passed, one of them Chuck Grassley supported, which was the gun trafficking bill, and the other one, background checks, which all the Republicans opposed because they're looking for some more of a compromise. It's pretty clear that Jeff Flake and Chuck Grassley and a few others on judiciary and beyond, Johnny Isaacson, John McCain, Susan Collins, Mark Kirk, all have said in some manner or not that they would support a background check bill. The biggest argument is, can they keep records? If their records can't be kept in some capacity, it really damages the ability, because the federal government destroys those records in 24 hours now.
Right.
So if they don't keep records, how do they get them to them before these records are destroyed and anybody has a chance to look at them if somebody – so that needs – but I actually do think a background check bill of some sort – this was the gold standard. I don't know it will get through in this way, but in some way. The assault weapons ban, however, and the 10-bullet limit, there's going to be a vote, I think, but – we're going to have to fight hard on it, and we will.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break. Cliff Schechter is going to stick with us, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Isabel Gillies. She is going to give me a movie recommendation while I maintain the delusion that I'll be able to watch a movie in the next 3 to 5 years. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. I'm joined by Cliff Schechter today, but also joining us now on the phone, ostensibly to give me a movie selection, not that I'm going to be able to watch a movie for a couple of years, is the wonderful Isabel Gillies. But, of course, before we get to Isabel, we need to get to Isabel's theme song.
Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know.
Listen to the picks from Isabel.
IsabelGillies.com.
Hello, Isabel.
Hello, Daddy.
Yes.
Hello.
I should clarify to people. Isabel is referring to the birth of my new son. That's not how Isabel normally addresses me.
No.
No.
No, only when Saul is in the world.
That's right. My new son, I didn't have an old son, but my newest child, Saul Arthur Cedar, is now up and about. He's he's, you know.
Is he like 5 days old?
He is now. He is now, I guess, 9 days old.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Are you having up in the middle of the night burping situations?
Yes.
And stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I got very
you a
little
big burper?
Well, I burp. I mean, you know, Nick is breastfeeding him, so I
then
try.
You're the burper.
Yeah, he's a burper, but you know, and I try and sort of, you know, get some sleep under the cover of like, oh, look, I can't breastfeed him, but we haven't quite rigged the apartment for that yet. Nikki turns on the light in our bedroom so that she can see, because the kid's constantly pooping now and peeing and. it's just boy.
I think it's legit actually when to let the dad sleep while you nurse because
well, then I made
you can't do anything.
I married the wrong person.
Well, I mean, what are you going to do? You can burp. That's the thing that you can do. But then the deal is, then you have to be alert during the day. You get to sleep during the night, and then you have to be on it during the day. That's kind of like the deal.
Yeah. No. I think the tricky part is there's no place for me to go right now because we have my mother-in-law is staying with us on the couch, and so I could theoretically sleep in the hallway, I guess, or in the bathroom, in the
bathtub.
Yeah. That may be in the offing soon, where I'm sleeping in the bathtub.
You know. My second child slept in the bathtub when he was that old, when he was a tiny baby.
Have we reached the statute of limitations on when you can say that without getting social services called on you? I mean, what do you mean?
No, it's a good idea. It was good in there. It was great. He was a great sleeper.
So you'd leave him there in the night?
Well, we jammed the crib into the bathtub.
Ah.
For me, we have this great park bench in my house where my older one sleeps really well.
That's Cliff. Yeah, Cliff leaves his kid outside. So wait a second.
You put the
like a bassinet in the bathtub? What was the theory behind that?
Because it was very dark in there, and there was
well, while you guys were sleeping at night or just during the day?
For his naps or while we were sleeping at night. He just slept. That was his bedroom for a while.
Wow. So what would happen? Not when he was a newborn, right? I mean, don't you have to be near the child or
no? No. What do you mean? I mean, you get up, you hear them, you get up, you nurse them.
Oh.
And then you put them back.
Oh, no. We have a co-sleeper. So, like, literally the kid's bed is attached to our bed. I couldn't even, like.
Oh, yeah. I didn't roll like that.
Oh.
I took naps with the baby and stuff. I took baths with the babies. I took naps. But at night, I was like, no, your bed is your bed. My bed is my bed.
Oh, Isabel, you have my wife's email and phone number, right?
Yeah, but your kids are probably better than mine. I believe in the
what?
Snug a lot during the day. Snug, snug, snug. Breastfeed all the time. I breastfed for years, like 2 years. But
yeah.
Then at night, no, you're in the bathtub, buddy.
And you breastfed your kids for the first 6 months and then picked it up again when they're like 4 or 5, right, for another year and a half?
Oh, God.
Have you ever seen that video?
Have you
ever seen that video of the British the British kids who are breastfeeding? Have you ever seen that? If you Google like 11-year-old, no, like 9-year-olds.
I know, and
Milky.
I think I saw that like 5 years ago or something.
Yeah, it's
when they get old enough to ask for a snack, it's probably time to.
Well, no, I'll tell you. With Mila, Nikki and I, before Mila was born, were saying I was saying very explicitly, like 6 months, and that's it. And she was saying a year. And
no, it's a year. It's definitely a year.
Listen, what happened? So then we moved upstate into the country, where it's like a little bit more. And I said, listen, we saw, you know, our neighbor came by and the kid says, I want milk, and gets up and sits on mom's lap. And then I'm like, that is not happening. We went to the point, I can tell you, at one point, Mila came up to me and said, milk, and then just laughed at me as if she was making a joke, and then went and suckled with Nick. And it lasted a long time. And I think we're still, I mean, she's a healthy kid, very healthy. But, you know, there's a little bit of I don't know.
It's all, you know, it's like the there's all with all this kind of stuff. It's that phrase that my husband just quoted from somebody, the narcissism of small differences. It's like everybody has their way to do it. You nurse for 6 months, you nurse for 6 years, you sleep with a baby, you don't sleep with a baby, and everybody feels so good about what they do, but it's really like this infinitesimal difference.
Right.
Because you know you're loving the kid incredibly and feeding them, and us as parents are like, are you good? Are you okay? Are you dry? Are you this? Are you that? Here's anti-disestablishmentarianism. Like we're crazed about them, so they're all good. It's just that we all get so sort of snooty about our little tiny differences. It's annoying.
Well, I'm not snooty about it. I'm convinced that most of the stuff that we do has been completely wrong. That's a
no, but you might not be. But it's like this. It's like this obsession with this small degree of difference.
Yes, I agree. There's a lot of weird competition involved in all of this that I try and stay out of, frankly.
Yeah, well, I try too, but sometimes it gets you.
All right, well,
maybe it's a woman thing.
I mean, I think the bathroom thing is that was wrong. That seems.
No, that
I think we can
good.
All agree that that's not appropriate. But I mean, aside from that, I think everything else you did was fine. Slightly lacking, but fine. Now, I understand.
Led Zeppelin used to do that on the road, though.
What's that? Put their kids in the bathtub?
Put themselves in the bathtub, I think.
I will tell you that I don't want to sort of, you know, one-up you here, but I'm tired, too.
All right, Isabel, I'll bite.
I have a puppy. I have a puppy, all right?
You got a new puppy.
Puppy.
And yes. You were up all night breastfeeding your puppy.
No, I'm walk. It's the first day of walking outside. The dog got inoculated, and now I can go outside. And I've been out 7 times today.
Wow.
With a dog.
That's a lot.
I know it's boring. I know it's boring, but it's just what's happening. I mean, you know, dog.
How's the book coming, Isabel?
Well, I'm waiting for it from my editor. That's why we took on the dog.
Oh, I see. So you gave it to your editor. Oh, well, that's encouraging. You know, Cliff Schechter.
I gave
Schechter's
it to the
here.
Editor. She loved it.
What's that? Ooh.
So,
oh, the editor did. Oh, good. All right.
Yeah, that's good. It'll come back, and then it'll be out in like 3 years. But anyway.
So now you got a dog.
I do have. So, yeah, now we got Maud, the puppy.
What kind of dog is it?
An English Cocker Spaniel.
I don't know what that is, really. I don't know what that is.
Wicked cute. His huge ears.
Cliff Schechter's here with us today, and he's been dying.
Are you actually, Cliff, are you in the studio?
I am that lucky today to be in the... Have you been here before?
I think that is lucky.
It's a pretty...
It sort of feels like it's not legit if you're on the phone.
It's a pretty sexy place around here.
I wouldn't, she's going to...
Except that I can't hear you. No.
Oh, you can't hear him?
Oh, can you hear me now?
No, I can't hear him.
What? Isabel, you still there?
I think we're losing her, yeah.
Well, Isabel, what's going on with your phone? Well, that's weird.
You sound like R2-D2.
No, you right. sound like R2-D2.
All right, we're going to call you right back. We'll call you right back.
Oh, wait, you want to call my cell phone? Is that better?
Why would your cell phone be better? I'm going to call you right back.
I don't know. But I can't hear Cliff. He sounds like, you know.
Wait, can you hear me?
A robot.
Can
hear you.
Okay, well, Cliff, let's try it again.
I'm really not that important anyhow. Can you hear me now?
Oh, now, yes, you are important, Cliff. I heard that.
Well, thank you. Have you been in this wonderful studio before?
No, I've never even been there. I've never been invited.
Because
I just talk about Adobe movies.
I knew if you brought that up.
Just
all right, Isabel, we're going to call you right back.
Okay.
All right, folks, what are you going to do? A little technical difficulty. Somehow Matt and Michael screwed up the... I don't know what they did here to...
Elizabeth, Isabel Gilley's phone line. We destroyed it.
That's we went over there and we just took a bat to
guys
it.
Take over
yeah, that was part of the strategy for us.
See? You guys got talent. Don't let Sam talk down to you.
Yeah.
If I take out Isabel, maybe Sam will just let me and Matthew Film Guy do every week.
I heard that, incidentally.
I said we'll hold it, and if Sam says anything snarky about our hosting abilities, we'll take out Isabel's pitch.
Yeah.
Done.
All right, let's see. Let's try it now. What's the matter? You all right?
My God, I thought you were kidding.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought you might have ditched me.
No, we didn't ditch you. We were just setting it up properly. All right. So Cliff has been wanting to say something to you for a long time, I guess.
No, it'd just be a lame Elliot Stabler joke, and I think people have made those jokes before, I'm sure.
Oh, tell me.
I just never thought he was good enough for you, quite frankly. I didn't like the way he treated you, and it kind of pissed me off.
Oh my gosh! You just made my day.
That was.
He's just complimented. He just complimented your character on SVU, right? Is that what it was? Is that what? Because I have to admit that I didn't see the show that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Cliff, thank you.
Of course.
That was a tough one, I thought. 12 years is not a lot of love, and everybody in the entire world was rooting for him to have an affair with his partner on me? Come on.
Exactly. Wow, you're doing the hard work. You're raising the kids, you know, holding things together. He's off gallivanting around town.
Not one, not two, not three, not four, but five kids I was raising.
That's right.
You guys had five kids on that show?
Yeah. No kidding. And... I'm not sure that a detective makes that much moolah.
No, I mean, I was wondering how you guys pulled that off financially.
This is, wow, I've never seen anybody kiss somebody's character's ass so much.
Those kids were raised pretty bad, to be fair.
I thought I was more just ripping into Elliot, but I'm also complimenting.
I've never seen anybody criticize a fictional character so much, too.
I'm just having fun.
It's
a good time.
Weird stuff going on here today.
Weird?
No, Cliff, I love it. I always admire your opinions and everything when I listen to you talk to Sam, and now I know that you're a good guy with, like, the right thinking behind you.
Thank you.
Love it.
Isabel couldn't even figure out how to listen to the show. What is she talking about? She's never heard you before.
That's right.
I listened to the one that I'm about to be on. So in case you ever want to ask me some questions.
There you go.
Isabel.
Yeah.
Isabel Portman over here.
Are you before we get into the movie pick, are you going to be attending the St. Patrick's Day parade tomorrow in New York City?
Hells to the no.
Excellent answer.
Well, it's too bad. No, sir. You will.
It's on Sunday, by the way.
I got news for you, Chief. It's on St. Patrick's Day is on Sunday. The parade is on Saturday.
Oh, well, that's whack because it's going to rain tomorrow.
Well, that's super whack because my daughter is going to be doing Irish step dancing in the parade, and I am going to be walking alongside her. I've got to wear a suit. Yeah.
Reminds me of that time that Ron Paul fan called.
That might get me there. I didn't know about Myla doing step dancing.
I am going to actually be in the St. Patrick's Day parade, if you can believe it.
I was going to say, it reminds me of that time that fan of Ron Paul called him and said you looked like you were Irish. That's what he said, right?
I don't remember that one.
Don't you remember he got mad at you? He said you looked Jewish or something like
that. Yes, that.
I was being sarcastic. Another joke falls flat.
I think Myla looks Irish.
Myla does have some Irish in her. Her grandmother's and grandfather's name on her mom's side was Kelly. In fact, Arthur, Saul's middle name, is from William Arthur Kelly.
Oh.
There you go.
Oh, my gosh. I love the name Arthur. I love the name Saul. You really got an A with that name.
Nope.
That is an A name.
All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Saul's a cool name.
That endorsement.
It's a very cool name.
Yeah.
He's destined to be a bookie.
Big home run.
What's that? Yes. Homeland, bookie, accountant, all that. Yes, I've heard it all before.
Better call Saul.
Yes.
God, you all sound like you're from Star Wars. I don't mean to complain, but you sound so robotic to me.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. You sound okay to us.
All right.
So let's hear what you have for a movie pick. Not that I'm going to be able to get to it for a long time.
I think you will.
Because
it's you might be able to watch it with Myla. Nikki will approve wholeheartedly because it's such a good movie, and I believe it was in the winner of an Academy Award.
Well, you had me
up
until that. All right, what is it?
It's called...
Wait, is this Argo? Because Mila did not like Argo.
No.
I'm joking.
Come on.
Okay, what is it?
Undefeated. 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 It is a documentary about a football team in Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh.
A high school football team. And this football team, this school, a very poor school in Tennessee, had never won a football game since the 1800s or something. And a coach comes in.
They had never won a single football team game?
No.
Wow. That's wow. They're
bad. And they were ready for this. They would be paid. How they paid for their program is that they would be paid to go play at one of the more affluent schools in Tennessee for their homecoming, because they knew that they would win, like beat them, and then they got paid $3,000, and that would pay for their football program.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. And it's such poor children in this school that you know, it's when you see parts of America and you're like, what the hell is going on? That this is the state of their school. This is the state of their neighborhood. This is the state of their family situations. Every single one of them practically has someone who's in jail. The father's not there, but they all get on this team and they have a hard time, and the coach is sticks with them. And it's really marvelous. And it's sort of all about character and, you know, team over individual, whatever's going on in your life. And I watched it with the boys. It's not a kids movie, but I watched it with the boys just to say, sort of like, look, people have a rough time in life, but they get through. And then anyway, so it's really exciting because they have a great season. I'm not going to tell you what happens, but
okay.
It's called Undefeated.
And you think Milo would be into this, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of, you guys have to sort of think it's sort of rough. It's not, you know, Brave.
She won't watch Brave because she's afraid of Brave. Mila's very, very timid about movies.
Well, then don't. This is not the movie for her. But this will make, especially with the hormones, Nikki cry so hard. I mean, maybe you have to, you know, it's so good. And you know you love documentaries. I love
documentaries. I do.
Documentaries.
No, it sounds like a good pick.
This is a really good one. It really, really is. And it's like, it's political and it's uplifting, and it's the coach. You'll love the coach. He's sort of an old boy, you know, what's called old Southern boy or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I love old Southern boys.
I know, but he takes an interest in this, like, completely black, poor, fucked up team. Ooh,
that's okay.
Sorry.
It's all right.
You'll love it. Everybody will love it. Everyone in the room, will you see it?
Absolutely.
I'll see it.
Yeah, I promise. Isabel.
We're 2 for 4 right now.
I'll check it out. It sounds pretty good.
3 for 4.
No, potentially.
It sounds like well,
good. We'll go with 3 for 4. That's pretty good.
Okay.
Is it streaming on Netflix, or do I have to wait for the DVD
to
arrive?
It's streaming. You can just do it right there.
All right.
It sounds like there's some good lessons I could watch with the older kid, with my 6-year-old.
Yeah.
I like it. Seriously.
All right. Isabel, you've made a sale.
Yeah. I mean, you have to say, with the 6-year-old, I mean, I was watching it with an 8-year-old and an 11-year-old, and I was like, okay, guys, this is not Disney here, but it's good. It's the values behind it are what I want you to have. So,
yeah, and I like them to learn that, you know, to appreciate what they have. And I mean, I don't want to, like, scare the hell out of him, but, you know, I think it's good for them to know that.
I don't know if you remember Scared Straight. I showed that to Mila last week, and she is really, really snapped her right into line. Now she goes to bed very quickly.
It's true, not to be corny, but honestly, when you see the houses that these boys are growing up in, and that they still get themselves dressed and get their own lunch and walk to school, and they're being raised mostly by their grandmothers. And they're all huge, and one guy's got a really bad temper, and it's fascinating. But you know, and then at the end, there's just really some great stuff that happens.
All right, don't tell us, don't spoil it.
I feel so good recommending this movie to you.
Great. Well, Isabel, thank you for the movie suggestion. Good luck with the puppy. Hopefully,
Sam,
you'll be able to come by. Thank you.
On your baby.
You'll
Peter got to see him, and I didn't.
Peter just, like, walked by him. He didn't really. He didn't even bother looking in. He just saw the. We actually took. I was shocked because we had Milo was sequestered for about 6 to 8 months.
Sequestered.
We didn't let her out of the house or have anybody come near her for 6 to 8 months. And we were out like on day three with the kid because Milo was so excited about showing off her brother.
Oh yeah, no, that's Saul. He's going to be walking himself to school, to preschool.
Yeah,
you're gonna. The whole thing is different with the second one.
It really is.
Whatever.
We got to talk more about
that. Peanut butter sandwich, kid. Good luck to you.
Yeah,
he'll
exactly.
Be smoking cigarettes in a month.
Oh yeah, no, we already got him on the cigarettes. All right, Isabel, we'll talk to you soon, and you got to come over and see the kid.
Okay, I sure will. Lots right. of love, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Isabel Gillies, ladies and gentlemen. Now we also have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song. Apparently, during the week that I was out, the Bloomberg ban on massive sodas was overturned by a judge. During the somebody's going to have to explain to me what the judge's ruling was, because I have to admit that I didn't follow it much. You guys are all shaking your heads at me.
We discussed it in length with Tina Dupuy. And it was basically.
And none of you guys know what the.
I don't remember.
Was? Well, he basically just said it was arbitrary and capricious.
Yes, I thought you were asking
what
exactly.
He really
what
just said that, you know, give him the capacity to make arbitrary policy, which was an arbitrary ruling.
But there was a hardcore debate in this room
right.
that day.
Whether you're for it or against it, and I'm not sure either way. I see pros and cons, but aren't all laws arbitrary and capricious? I mean, you draw a line somewhere to a certain degree on what's acceptable and what's not acceptable.
Well, they said it was an arbitrary and capricious ruling.
Isn't that a great way just to describe New York City?
Yeah.
I mean,
trying to get over here today.
I don't know.
Very
we debated the soda ban back in the day, and my feeling was if there's data that shows that it's going to help kids, then why not?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I backed it 100%.
Here's my whole thing, which is we're all, I mean, at this point, because we don't live in Ron Paul's world, people we accept people into emergency rooms, and we're going to do that. We've socialized the cost of healthcare, which I believe we should
right.
do. I believe we should socialize it much further. I think we should have single payer. We certainly should have a public option. But at that point where you're paying, where we're all in this pool and in some sense paying for other people's healthcare,
It's not just that.
I think that you should when it comes to smoking and beverages and other behavior, we as a society need to come to some conclusions about how you know.
And I'll also remind you that we're not only socializing the externalities that come in terms of the cost that comes with these people selling their product. We are literally subsidizing the product.
That's exactly right, too.
You know, there's a reason why it's such a good – it's so cheap and there's such a high markup on 62 ounces of soda that you sell.
They're loading it up with crappy, cheap corn syrup.
We're paying for their sweetener.
We're subsidizing the corn, and we're having all this stuff loaded up with crap that there's clear scientific evidence is causing mortal obesity throughout our country. I mean, believe me.
The law had so many exceptions, though. I mean, you see me. I drink a lot of soda, but even I think like a 7-Eleven Big Gulp is disgusting. I don't drink that much. But the Big Gulp was an exception. 7-Eleven could still sell something like that. I didn't get, like, what's the point if you're going to do something like that?
That sounds rather arbitrary and capricious to me.
Well, I mean,
that's true.
You know, everybody knows why there's exceptions, because you cannot make a law in society without some lobbyist coming in. And, you know, unfortunately, that's the way that laws get made in this country. And the way that you move towards an outcome that you like is you get as much as you can at that point. I mean, you know, we've had this full sandwich, half a sandwich debate in the past. And sometimes it, you know, I'm on one side of the sandwich and sometimes I'm on the other side of the sandwich.
Well, let me also put it this way. What I think the best, and we did this, a great example, okay. So there's a couple of us, as you said, ex-New Yorkers pulled out to the Cincinnati area, the little conclave. You know, white smoke if we're going to hang out, black smoke. No, I mean, we'll get together and you know.
Are these friends that you had before or that you met in
I've met since I've gotten there.
Okay.
And so it came up the other day. I was talking with a good friend who grew up in the West Village here. And we were laughing at sort of people we knew from Ohio when they come to New York and they want to buy a pack of cigarettes. They literally freak out because it's like four times as expensive.
Right.
And I'm exaggerating a little bit, but they're like, oh, my God, because of the taxes.
Right.
So to me, it's not that I don't agree with what Bloomberg did in that case. I think I do overall because of everything we've discussed. But it seems to me the better way to go about it would be taxing it. Because on some level, then no one can get around it. Because I suppose you could just go and buy 10 small sodas if you want to get around.
Fine.
So I'm just saying that I think is just the better way to get there. But I think we as a society have to set those priorities and say if something is enormously unhealthy and is a strain on our system and a variety of other things is causing this kind of obesity in kids – you know,
stop basically
stop subsidizing it, tax right. it, you know, and I mean, we know
well, this
we're
is what we should be doing with oil and with gas. I mean, that's basically
and pharma right. and I mean, right. on and on.
Right.
You know, next time you see a guy walk down the street and you find out he's from Monsanto, kick him in the balls.
Right. Now let me ask you this.
I didn't really mean that.
How did you meet these New Yorkers in, do you guys like go down to like? Is there like one bar that's like New York bar?
hey, forget about it.
Come on in. I'm your host for tonight.
Do you ever see Highlander? The movie Highlander. Oh, you never saw that?
No.
When they become immortal and that stuff? There's a force that draws them towards...
Oh, my God.
It's like a New Yorker. We're drawn towards... No,
I'm just curious because I haven't met anybody new in my life in probably 15 years. I've been living here for...
There's reasons for that, Sam.
Right.
No. I mean, seriously, I meet them because you meet a variety of people and we sort of, you know, in some of the circles...
You met Michael and I.
Right.
And look at these guys are awesome.
That's right. I mean, you guys are producers, and I hire people to meet them.
You really meant that whole friendly but not friends with,
right.
didn't you?
Friendly. That's what you always say. Yeah, I'm friendly with them. No, I mean, we met a good group of people, and they're not all from New York, but there's some okay. are. And so we just, you know, that topic, we were out to dinner last week with some friends where the wife is from New
Wait,
York.
Wait, you go out to dinner with friends?
See, this is the life that's waiting for you in Ohio, Sam.
That's what I'm saying. You can afford stuff. You can live in a house. It doesn't take 75 minutes to get from 3rd Avenue.
Send me
to
some
park.
Stuff on Trulia. All right, folks, before we get there, let's we've got a Jimmy Reefer Cake song. I guess today's going to be a Freebie Friday. Folks, if you have the means in which to become a member, by all means do. You know, if you don't have the financial means, then send us an email and have some patience with us because we're backlogged now a little bit.
Michael. Seriously, folks, join. And I'm not just saying that because I come on here because I don't get any money from this whole gig. Well, I've tried to hit Sam up. It's not happening. I'll tell you, I've gone on numerous shows, and this is easily just about the best there is. So, and I mean that. So... You want to get information and you want to learn some things, this is the place to do it.
And now Cliff has earned his cash for today.
can I have my coffee money, Dad?
Yeah, and he got a free water today, incidentally. We never do that for anybody. It wasn't
actually,
full.
Actually, it was drank to this point.
we didn't give him a full one. All right, so let's play the Jimmy Reefer Cake thing. We're going to go long. We're going to take some phone calls and some IMs. Extra bonus time today. But let's play the Jimmy Reefer Cake song.
For many years, the standard soda size was 6 ounces, not 16. It was 6. Then it became 12, and people thought that was huge. Then it became 16, and then 20 ounces.
We believe it's reasonable. Man, Michael Bloomberg doesn't like tall sodas. 16 ounces. Is his maximum quota for all your sodas. The mayor is a man who stands 5'8". Wants to ban tall sodas throughout all the state. He's so small, it's the big tall soda he hates. I wish he would just stay at home and masturbate. Don't like that soda, 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 soda. Dr. Pepper. Coca-Cola, my favorite soda, 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 soda. Dr. Pepper, Coca-Cola, all right, carbonated water. Fructose, corn syrup, and or sugar. They don't even know, and we don't even care. Fatty is a man who thinks that soda is great. He likes to drink a lot of soda, and he stays up late. Likes the sugar, he likes the caffeine.
One day he dreams to own his own soda machine. Dreams of soda, 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 soda.
Daddy's dreams turned into a nightmare when he awoke too enormously large to even emerge from his own bed for another soda.
I got to say, Jimmy Reaper Cake, I don't know if he's been going for this for a long time, but I'll tell you what I took from that. There's a John Lennon Yoko Ono quality to that song.
Ah.
Right? Am I right about that?
Yes, that's true.
There was a lot of, there was definitely a, there was a Yoko John Lennon thing going on with that. I thought that was pretty good.
The production value on that song was great too.
Uh-huh.
I've noticed that when it's an issue that Jimmy Reaper Cake has a special interest in. Everything is what goes up to 11. Everything is pushed up
when there's an emotional investment.
Yes.
No marijuana mention.
There was no marijuana mention in that. That should get some sort of other.
It should get a. It should get a, like a.
There we go. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, real impressive showing. All right, let's go to the phones. We got you calling from a 330 area code. You there?
This is Seamus from Austin.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing all right.
What's up?
Hey, my question is about the minimum wage.
Yeah.
Very, very grateful for Obama for bringing it up as a talking point for 2014, but unclear on some of the substance and nuance, although I'll admit I'm coming from a position of ignorance on it.
All right.
I think it's no question that it needs to be raised. It needs to be raised to bring them closer to making a living wage being above the poverty line. But I hear the progressives unanimously cheer it and the right unanimously decry it. And money has an absolute value, but it's also kind of relative to an extent, so I'm worried about some of the other working poor and other the fixed income poor.
Because it will create inflation for goods, is that it?
Right, and for some areas like energy, water, spectrum, sometimes the food, especially meats, there's demand and competition. We've already talked about like how broadband and telecom companies have actuaries that tell you how much you should be charged based on how much of their paycheck they think you deserve. And the minor factor is increasing the pay of the employees by paying them a higher minimum wage. It's a much more minor factor, but all those three things combined will raise the prices on goods, and people on Social Security, welfare, other fixed income, low-income soldiers might be affected by that.
My sense is that the numbers of people that you're talking about and the how dispersed they are geographically, it will not affect the prices of the things you're talking about. That's my sense. I haven't, to be honest with you. It's a good question. I haven't seen anybody write anything about that, and I haven't gone out looking for it particularly. But in discussing the raising the minimum wage, even those who are against it, I haven't seen anybody write significantly about it. But my guess is that it is it would not impact. I guess it's conceivable in I don't even know. You would have to have a very sort of concentrated area where this was impacting like some type of one factory town that, for what you're talking about to take place. But, I mean, it's an interesting critique. I haven't seen it made because I suspect that the implications of raising the minimum wage is in and of itself not so extreme. In real dollar amount, we're not talking a huge amount. It makes a big difference, obviously, to someone who is making 7.25 to go to 10.25 or 10.15 or 9.25. But in terms of how it impacts demand, I don't know that it's that that it would be that extreme, because I don't know that it would be that concentrated in terms of it creating some type of inflationary pressure on commodities. But certainly not, let me put it this way, certainly not as much as the inflationary pressure of having the income inequality that we have, which I think, you know, outweighs that. I mean, but it's an interesting question, but I'll look into it. I appreciate the call, buddy.
Okay, thanks, John.
Bye. All right, let's get some IMs. Cliff is still with us or back with us, although we might lose Michael at some point. Make sure you wash everything you touch, Michael. I cannot get a cold, or more so than I have. Bush and Chains, welcome back, Sam. Is that non-empathetic of me?
No.
Don't talk too closely into the mic.
I don't have a cold.
I'm joking.
Oh, you... Wrong symptoms.
What do you think you have?
It's like a migraine.
Oh, really?
It's not great. Please, go
ahead. Michael's always got to try to outdo me. I'm the one who came in this morning sick, and Michael's over here now going, wee, I'm sick.
I felt like I wasn't being...
So what you're saying is you're tweaking right now.
I'm tweaking out.
Bush and Chains, welcome back, Sam, and what a comeback. You successfully embarrassed you and yours with all that Ron Paul gold silver hit piece on YouTube for all time. Now that the news is finally breaking that the gold-silver markets have been manipulated on the same grand scale as the LIBOR scandal, well, you're looking even more ridiculous. Send me a link. I know it'll be zero hedge, but just send me a link. begged you to stop exposing your own economic stupidity for years. Ignoring this, your insistent, willing, ignorant arrogance and smarmy smugness has now become that of any Fox News host. Congratulations. I may be an arrogant ass, proud of it actually, but at least I know what the F I am talking about. On the lighter side, thanks to the name mentioned, my people all know that I'm Bush and Chains. They love it. Oh, yeah. Keep voting.
I think that Bush and Chains guy is the one who insulted me when one of the times when I was...
Of course, yes.
Yeah, I like it. Keep him coming, baby.
Yeah. Can I ask? I saw Bush and Chains was tweeting at me the other day. He says that he's an SLA member on his Twitter account. Is that true that he's a member of the Simonese Liberation Army? Is that what he's talking about?
I don't know. We'll see what he responds.
I remember when Sam was starting the show and I read the marketing plan. That was one demographic they were going after.
That was huge
SLA listenership.
Yeah.
So
CPAC equals loser stock, says Matt in the BK. I always welcome the support from converts, but conservatives' deathbed conversions feel selfish to me. I'm sure that Portman knew other gay people or had close friends with gay children.
That's right.
What about them? Yeah, exactly.
That's the proper question. What about them?
Or he must have known that there were parents with gay children.
Or how about this?
In general,
yeah,
right?
Well, of course he's come across this before, and he was in the Bush administration, the first Bush administration, meaning he knew Dick Cheney.
Right.
I wonder if
the idea is this, is that he always sort of felt like this is horrible. But what are you going to do? And then one of his advisors said, hey, you know.
It's safe now.
It's safe for you because you have a son who's gay. You can play this off as you're a parent. And it could give you some cred. Look, we know Ohio is moving in a certain direction. If this becomes an issue in your next reelection, it may be problematic for you. Good time for you to get out ahead. You'll get some good press. Those people who are pissed about it, they got nowhere to go anyways, and at least they can write it off. Well, he just has to do this because his wife probably made him or something like that. I mean, do you think that's the calculation?
Yes, I think I can almost speak to this perhaps. I can show my, my smugness, my smarmy smugness. That's what I want to show. Having worked in a number of different campaigns, there are exceptions, obviously. There are some people out there that are the real deal,
right,
who I've worked for. They will make a decision based upon what they believe. And I could name them, you know, they're fantastic people. Most people I've worked for, that is a conversation that would have happened. It's a conversation that we all would have been a part of and said, you know, what's the upside? What's the downside? Can you move forward on this? Can you do this? And I promise you, I'm so sure of it, that a conversation at least of that sort happened. And they felt exactly what you just said. Look, the majority right now, new younger demographics are in favor of gay marriage by large numbers. You know, the cities and particularly where you're from, Cincinnati, is moving more in that direction. You know, and you need to pick an issue to break away and show your independence, that you're not completely sucking up to the Tea Party. You can get away with this one because you've got a gay son.
Right. And that was also strikingly similar to the conversations we had early on this show about whether or not I was going to support Social Security.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember that. That's exactly right.
conservatives understand sympathy, not empathy. And I'm not so sure on the former. Randian selfishness, by the way, I've decided to base all of my political philosophy on the Ent meeting in the Two Towers. How is that any different from crafting a policy from a fictional speech by a fictional character in a horribly written, plotting doorstop of a novel? Says Matt in the BK. But it's not. Horse Zachary. While I'm saddened you didn't take my suggestion of your son's name, I take comfort in the fact that I can gaze at the initials SAS and pretend that you really did name him Second Amendment Cedar. At any rate, you can still call him Sam and Chains for short. Big ups to Fiscal Cliff Schequechter.
You know what? I would have gone, as I said, with Cassius Clay Cedar.
I heard that. That's pretty good.
Okay.
You're not the only person actually to mention that to me.
I like Arthur Cedar. If he just went by Arthur Cedar.
Yeah.
That's good.
In fact, I accidentally called him the first day that I found out his name, I accidentally called him Arthur Saul Cedar. And now you don't want to give your kid that name with those initials.
That's a good point. Same as studio. Defense before defenders. Military revokes tuition assistance for its active duty members, but Congress builds more tanks destined for a Reno boneyard. Indeed. A square. Sam, Mazel Tov, listening live for a change. You sound great. And from your convo with Cliff, clear that you have not missed the beat. Matt and Mike did make you proud. And now planning a Majority Report Network. Expansion based upon their successful run this week. What do you think? Well, I mean, who knows? Spinoff shows. On another note, very disappointed about Chris Hayes' lineup change, assuming he will not so weekend program. The guests, the insightful long format, the discussions we sorely missed. That is a big question as to what they're going to do with that format. Let's talk a little bit about this.
Yeah.
I'm going to be doing Chris Hayes this weekend, the show.
Come on, you've already got enough kids.
Right.
Oh, wait. No.
And I for one, agree with that sentiment. I wonder whether or not he's going to add a little up flavor. I mean, look, he's not going to keep the same format. There's no way they'll do that.
But he may try to bring some of the aspects of that weekend show to the...
That people have to understand, I agree. The thing that people have to understand is, from a production standpoint, how hard it is to do their show. Because to assemble these people, you know, 4, 8 people, whatever it is, a weekend, simultaneously in one place is a very difficult thing. I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, one of the advantages of doing a radio show or, a show that is primarily audio is that I have a far greater range of guests than I would if I insisted on guests being in studio all times. A TV show, they do it occasionally, but very rarely.
Right.
They'll have somebody on
Skype
just audio.
Or you do Skype here and there. I've done that a few. But it's true. And because I can speak from my experience, you know, a lot of the times when I would go and do something on a weekend or a night, I want to be with my kids, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it does make it a lot tougher. I do so much more radio these days. Partially, you know, just because, you know, I don't get invited on TV. But seriously, I mean, a lot of it is I really just – it fits with my schedule so well.
It's much easier to get guests on the context of
this would only be Cliff's second time on the show if you insisted he be here every time.
See, that's true.
There you go. No, I mean, it is. I mean, it makes it a lot tougher. There's a studio not too far from where I live, and I've done some stuff, I think, for almost all of the stations from there. But often they will call me and then tell me they want me to be in New York.
Now,
I don't happen to live.
What will be interesting is the changes in technology are such that we are probably only about 5 years away for it to be within some type of reasonableness that you could have people who are setting up their own mini studios based on IP. I mean, this is something that, you know, I've already started to look into out of here. Now, it doesn't have as much value in New York.
Right.
But in a city like Cincinnati, if somebody could set up a studio that would cost them $5,000 to build
yeah.
and then rent that out to TV shows, maybe they only rent it out 20 times a year.
Yeah.
But they have some other use for it to do these type of hits. I mean, who knows? The technology's changing, but we're not there yet.
Plus, if the technology moves toward, and let's say I could beam myself to New York.
Let's not get carried away.
Okay.
Let's not get caught.
Just, you know, we'll see. You don't know where technology is going.
1558.
I could be the Reagan hologram, for example. You could hologram me.
Okay. Have a Cliff Schechter hologram.
That's right. I could be sitting here right next
the
to you.
The Schechtergram.
A
couple of links here. Let me
Sequester
see.
Sequestergram.
1558. I'll check those links out. The soda ban only applies to local businesses and not chain stores, so only small business in New York would be affected by it. Bloomberg soda law is essentially removing competition out of the path of big corporations. Well, I think that's the case. I think obviously it was the lobbying power of this. I would imagine, and I don't know, but I would imagine that somebody in the mayor's office was also sort of saying, like, okay, let's put up a graph of where we have this obesity problem. And you're going to find that the obesity problem is going to be situated in poor neighborhoods in the city, because one of the issues is that you live in a poor neighborhood in New York City. You don't have access even to a supermarket.
That's right.
You don't have access to any decent food.
And frankly,
any fresh food.
Right, and you don't have access. And also, let's be honest here, the economics of it. You go and you get a family meal at McDonald's is going to be a lot cheaper than alternatives.
And I mean, so I think they probably said that in circumstances that they're seeing smaller chains than the bigger national chains are in these neighborhoods. Now, I don't know. That's my speculation. But I agree with you that it is problematic in that respect. It does not make sense that you wouldn't do it wide. Now, but I think at the time that we talked about this, I would like to see a tax. You tax any soda over the size of 32 ounces, double tax on it, whatever it is.
And as far as we know, remember, Justice Roberts would even support it. Remember, he's the big power of taxation through the government guys. So,
you know, the thing is, I can't even think of any, like, you know, bodega or mom and pop shop that sells sodas that big. It's all from the big chains like McDonald's. And I mean, unless you're buying like one to take home for multiple drinks, like a 2-liter Coke, like none of these places are selling like
all. I don't know.
And even the difference within them. I mean, the McDonald's one is large. You ever go to, I don't know how many Wendy's are around here. That thing's a freaking bucket.
Yeah.
I mean, the large thing.
Well, you're in ground zero of Wendy'sville, right? I mean, Ohio.
That's right. Wendy's is based in just north of there, Dublin, Ohio. Yeah. But no, you're basically right, Sam. I'm not trying to criticize.
Columbus. We're in New York.
I'm reaching out for accuracy.
We're in New York.
Nothing is west of the frickin' Hudson.
I don't think Sam has ever had anything from McDonald's or Wendy's because I've never seen it.
Well, I haven't. I don't think I've eaten there in years. But as a kid, all the time.
Okay, just you always seem completely.
Wow. I've never had a Big Mac in my life.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Wow.
Have you had a hamburger from McDonald's?
Nothing from McDonald's in my life besides French fries.
That's weird.
Go ahead.
You don't have to.
I'm happy now. So glad to see you again. When people come from fear, their frame of reference shrinks to the size of their own belly button.
Or something else.
They tend to be impulsive and extremely self-centered. The Republican Party attracts those types because their locus of control resides outside themselves. So they need someone in authority to protect them and tell them what to do and think. Liberals are the brave, courageous ones. Cliff, you are still here. Much love to you too. My first psychology teacher said children are like pancakes. You should be able to throw the first one away.
What?
You know, I know what she's saying. I know what she's saying. I feel, first of all, dealing with Saul, we have so much more confidence.
The second kid, I can see that.
There is no doubt that we are going to raise him. I mean, I think in terms of values, but I think it's going to be the same. But I think in terms of like dependency, in terms of like self-sustaining, we're going to be so much better with
you. You're always scared you're going to break the first one.
It's just natural. The second one, you're like, I got another one.
That's right.
I don't know.
If I break one,
I've got a spare.
And I think that we're going to be much better. I think we're going to be much better with Saul.
I don't know about that. As the first of four kids, I was probably the one raised the best because you take care of the first one extra special, you know, make sure they get this and that. And then when you have your second one, you just get lazy. It's just
I think
like,
that's what we're saying. You worry more about the first one, but the second one, you're more relaxed. You're like, oh, look, they lit a fire again.
No, but I was reading it as Sam saying how Saul will be better at Mila's age than Mila is right now.
I think
which
in
is
some
not
things,
the
well,
truth.
No, I think the difference, there's, I think, obviously, it puts more economic pressure on you. At the time and where we lived, Nikki could, we had no babysitters, basically. It was just Nikki spending all the time there. And, you know, you got the mother or the father, for that matter. It was always my dream to be a stay-at-home dad. I only had about 3 months of it. But
Really?
Oh, yeah. Ugh. Oh, God.
I did it. They screwed up, like, when we were still in D.C., my first son was born. My wife was working at a nonprofit, and they messed up on the plan for her time at home. So I, at the time, was, you know, working for myself consulting. Oh, I had a month of stay-at-home dad. And, oh, if you ever want to respect if your wife stays at home, what she does, try that for a month.
Oh, no, that's why I'm saying that. Didn't you go crazy that month?
I can't do it.
I'm so well-suited.
Oh, maybe Sam's the guy. I can't do it.
No, I mean, I would totally be on board of it. But the point is that you have a parent who's talking to the kid all the time, and is, you know, theoretically a little more engaged than a babysitter might be. Maybe. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I think that was my perception. And so, and having only one for so long, they become more verbal because, you know, she's sitting at the, we're not having kids' meal, parents' meal. How do you say to your kid when you have one kid sit at the kids' table? It's just a little pathetic. Like, you know, here's parents. We're having to, you're over there at the kids' table. You know, you can't do that. But I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm conflating two
things.
What
are you saying, Sam?
All right. To Cliff, a while back, Skate. Great return to the show, Sam and Cliff. A mazel tov, a little Saul, Alinsky Cedar, and the health of your family.
I like that one.
I do too.
Yeah, you should have.
To Cliff, a while back, you mentioned that you used to work at one New York Plaza. At the time, I was interning at 4 New York Plaza. Thought that was pretty cool. On campus here at SUNY Binghamton, we had a college Democrats versus Libertarians debate, and one of the Libertarian debaters had the audacity to claim that Social Security was a Ponzi scheme. I channeled my inner Sam Cedar and debated him out of that position. Good for you. I love to hear
Thank
it.
Thank you. Yeah, we need that. Well done.
Kevin, 11-7-21, upstate shooting. It's crazy to read the people's comments about this shooting. I haven't even heard it. They call the man nutcase, loony, wackadoodle, and things like, I'm glad he's burning in hell now, while completely ignoring the fact he's a victim of a culture that demonizes the mentally ill and makes mental health care impossible for the poor to obtain. These mentally ill shooters are the first victims. It's no wonder so many mentally ill people prefer to become loners rather than suffer the stigma they receive for asking help if they can even get help. Few other illnesses receive this kind of social condemnation. Lawyer Matthew, agree with Isabel. Your bet is for you, not them. Hope you enjoyed the card.
The bath is for them.
I don't even know if I saw the card.
The e-card?
I gotta check that out. He sent me Juan Miguel, excited about Chris Hayes' new time slot on MSNBC. Kind of sad for Ed, though. For films, I recommend Safety, not guaranteed for you. I also like You Don't Know Bo for sports docs.
Interesting.
Hugh BC, Undefeated is a very good movie. Slight correction, the team had never won a playoff game in their history. All right, yeah, I was going to say, that seems ridiculous. They never won a game. Bartleby 141, congrats to you and Nikki. Welcome to Saul. Apropos of your earlier discussion with Cliff, I have this argument constantly with my old man. We align politically on virtually every issue. He's pro-choice, pro-gay marriage, pro-gun control. He's not a religious nut. He's anti-war, and he loves his Medicare. He's for decriminalizing pot, etc. The only issue he cares about is taxes. Against my better judgment, I let him goad me into debating it again recently, and after ticking him off all the issues we agreed on, I asked him point blank, so if you were a person of more modest means, you'd probably vote Democrat, right? He sort of stammered a little, but he had to agree with my premise. Sadly, I think he's representative of a lot of Republican voters out there.
Point out to him, what you need to point out is that if you were more progressive and we did the things progressives want, your taxes could probably still go down. All the money we waste on the police state, all the money we waste on prisons, all the money we waste on wars, all the money that we waste on paying off pharma and all the other guys, you know what? You could balance the budget, have all sorts of fantastic social programs, and probably still give everybody tax cuts.
Well, you know, the part of the problem is, I mean, I don't know if I necessarily agree with the idea that we could lower taxes on the rich in that respect, or anybody. I mean,
well, it depends who we're talking about. I don't believe in lowering them on the rich, because they're pretty low as it is. But
one argument is, if we had a greater social safety, not just net, but a social safety support system funded by your taxes, then you wouldn't need to leave as much to your kids, maybe, because they would have a lot of necessities taken care of. But at the end of the day, people want their money. If they have a lot of it, they want to divvy it out. They were driven in some respects to get money. That doesn't mean that that those people who are driven always get the money. And that's a tough argument. I mean, I don't know how you argue against one person's selfish interests, but you could say if everybody felt that way, then, we would never have any place to have dumps. It's just, you just got to argue that it's fundamentally on some level unfair because, look, people don't want power. You know, we see like dumps and power stations put in poor neighborhoods. If they had the same political strength that you had, that money had, they wouldn't be there. They'd be in your neighborhood, too. And,
there are things also, though, I think that, again, even to sort of the more economic conservatives. So, the argument that which I didn't understand why it wasn't made more during healthcare. Preventative care is a lot cheaper than waiting until somebody ends up in a hospital.
That is true. But this guy's just talking explicitly about, right, I want my taxes to go down.
Right. And some of it takes too much. It reminds me, you were talking about welfare reform earlier. Some of it takes too much to get there. There's too many if this and that, and some people can't grasp. But I remember, from Michael Morse from Bowling for Columbine, when he pointed out at one point that the youngest child shooter in this first grade class in Flint, Michigan, that he showed how his mother, because of the welfare reform law, had to go and spend 2 hours, 3 hours on a bus every day to get to some ridiculous job that paid her almost nothing to get back. Nobody was watching this kid. In other words, some of our societal decisions cause further harm.
The best argument you can make is say, like, if you care about your grandchildren or your children, understand that even if you leave them more money because you don't have the estate tax, they're going to be living in a far more dysfunctional society.
There's more criminals, more guns, more global warming, more all sorts of things. Good luck to them, even with their extra money.
Et cetera, et cetera. And that's the only way I could do it. Barring a few technical glitches, Matt and Michael did a fantastic job in your absence.
Woohoo.
All right. Triangle Bill. Jimmy Reefer, KK, going long today. Yeah. Herbalaz. SLA, Silver Liberation Army. An organization encouraging people to buy silver and thereby cause Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan Chase to be forced into a margin call on their silver put options. SLA is the idea of the RT gadfly named Max Kaiser. Ah, yes. Cliff, loved the picture of your family on the merry-go-round. Moshi Moshi.
Thank you.
I would say Cliff Schechter is your name drop Friday for person today. Shofar, please. I'm not even sure. Buzz Hoff. Sam, what's your take on those who feel signing a pledge not to vote for cuts to Social Security and Medicare is akin to signing a no-tax pledge? Well, I talked about this the other day. One of the differences is that you're supporting the desire of 80% of the electorate. That's one thing. Two is there's a fundamental difference between saying, I am explicitly saying that as government decides what to do, that I believe this should be a priority versus I am against government. Because when you say you're saying no taxes, no revenue, you're striking at the heart of the process of government.
That's a great point.
You're basically saying that government should not have the flexibility to deal with the realities that exist, as opposed to saying, I want a pledge as to what you perceive the function of government should be and or what the priorities of government should be. There's a difference there. Now, that may be splitting hairs, but then I would also say there's also a difference between signing a pledge that has the support of 80% of the population. That's a big difference, too. I mean, I don't have a problem that they signed a pledge to Grover Norquist. I have a problem with what the pledge is. If they signed a pledge to Grover Norquist and said, I'm going to do everything I can to promote peace in the world, I'd have no problem with that.
In fact, actually, we need to get conservatives back to the point where they used to be, when being conservative meant that you didn't think government should grow out of control, in their words, but you realized there were certain essential functions and things that only government could do.
Yeah.
And I've heard a few conservatives speaking a little bit more like that lately. I think, again, you still have all the crazies and they get all the press. But I really do think some of what's going on right now, from the recent election results to hurricanes to other things, you know, in addition to the demographic changes, you may see that
it's
change.
Also a dead-end position, I think, that
right,
they
well,
realize.
Well, it gets you nowhere. Yeah, exactly. It gets you just to having Somalia as your country.
We're not going to have time to get to calls. I'm sorry. We're running way late. I got a couple more IMs. We'll pick you up on Monday, I promise. Jeffy 223, why do the Democrats think that the best strategic direction for them is to accommodate cuts to the big three when they're in the big three, I assume, are Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, when there are clear indications that people care more about the cuts to these programs than they do about the deficit reduction? They're dead meat if they propose them because it's only a trap to Republicans. My 10-week-old son just took a huge crap, so I'll listen to your response while I deal with this disaster.
Good metaphor, the disaster that he's dealing with.
I understand, Jeffy. Believe me, I understand. Cleaning a boy is frankly more difficult than cleaning a girl.
Is. Welcome to the world, man. I got two of them. They spray in all directions.
They pee everywhere.
Make sure the paint on the wall's dark.
And when they crap, it gets all over their private parts.
That's right.
I'll say it. Their testicles.
You've got to clean the testicles. It's not a lot of fun.
It's not. It was much easier cleaning a daughter. You just go front to back.
There
and
are no
that's all you got
to
remember.
Clean, unless you're in like a Hangover movie, there's no testicles to clean.
I don't know that they think it's the best. I mean, I think part of the things with Democrats is that I think some of them think that it's good strategy just because they're in a bubble and they think that the establishment press is indicative of what the population says. And then I think a part of them are just – they're just rich.
It's totally trapped by conventional wisdom on one end, and yes, it's the –
that it's actually part of their agenda on the other.
It all feeds into each other, but it's the inability to see beyond their circumstances, which we've talked a lot about this
year. Adam Bomb 99, flying cars and mini studios. We don't lack the technology to do what you're talking about. It's simply a question of bandwidth, which, as you've discussed, is simply a question of regulation. Yes, Adam Bomb, you're absolutely 100% right. If we had fiber everywhere, you'd see this propagating much more, much more so. Then I think you'd be at close to $5,000. 6,003, 8. Welcome back, Sam. Much love to you and your family following the birth of your son. Have you heard this? Citing $100 billion loss in 2012, radio industry says Rush Limbaugh bad for business. I don't know who radio industry is, but I think that's also an excuse. The fact is it's a contracting business. Limbaugh has not – Limbaugh's troubles has not helped them.
Well, he's not personally contracting, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, just want to be clear.
Let's go. We'll take this call. You've been waiting for a long time, and then we'll take one more IM, and that'll be it. So no more IMs. It'll be PF1800. You're calling from a 575 area code. Who's this?
This is Ryan from Don Anna County, where Stephen Slevin just sued and won $15 million. I just wanted to do, like, an update because I know the story is kind of, like, gone now. But since I live from the area, I decided to look into it some more. And Karen Perez, she's, like, a commissioner in our county.
All right, well, let me just catch people up. Stephen Slevin is the story of a guy who was basically put in solitary confinement for 2 years. For drunk driving, or what was it that he was put in solitary for?
It was they suspected him of DUI or DWI, but because they never did any court proceedings, like who knows if that was real? And they also charged him with driving a stolen truck. However, that truck was borrowed to. He borrowed that from a friend because he was depressed at the time and he just wanted to go on a cross country road trip.
So, and then he got lost in the system in some way, right? I mean, what? You there?
But
I think we're loose.
Hello?
He got locked up for 2 years. You know, his toenails were growing around his foot. He had actually written letters to the dentist at Donna Anna County. And we know the dentist got these letters, but nothing was done about, like, any of his issues. However, this is not by far the first case where this has happened. There's actually a publisher's clearinghouse. They released a court document from a woman who sued for, like, mental health issues from the same Donna Anna County Detention Center.
Jeez.
And there's actually an 8-man class action lawsuit that was done at the exact same time Stephen Slevin had his issue. And I'm looking at the Las Cruces Sun News page right now, and there's a lady by the name of Roseanne Ortega, and she says that her mentally ill son has been incarcerated, I think she says for the same accusations as, like, DWI, for 13 months.
Wow.
And she has called Chris Barella, who is the guy in charge of the county of the detention center, and he is personally refusing like access to her son for lawyers or like media. And again, this isn't the first time this has happened, because not only is this the first time, and it's not only this happened to Slevin, but there's a gun store owner who was accused of selling like $70,000 worth of like AK-47s to the Mexican cartels. He has actually, like, his lawyer has been denied access to him. And the media, like Ashley Meeks, she is a Las Cruces Sun News reporter, she's just been outright denied access for, like, an interview at the detention center. Now, interesting thing about Chris Barella is that he himself is a felon. But he was, like, sort of...
Hold on. Listen. We're at the end of the show. I don't got time to really go into this. Will you call back Monday and we'll talk about it?
Monday?
Yeah.
All right. Sure thing.
Thanks. All right, folks. Final IM of the day. PF1800, have you told Stahl the ending of Skyfall yet? I did. He seemed not terribly interested. All right, folks, see you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice was made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. Shifted in and out of gear, waiting for my moment to happen. I don't know how much longer I can stay in, or how much more I got to pay to play in. I know somehow the lights got graded somewhere before the credits faded, but my pilot light shining. Pilot light shining bright.